So, hey, stop me if you've heard this one. Whenever I go out places, I always bring a lime with me and I write my phone number on it. You could call it my pickup lime. Look at her face.
Oh, gather round, you sailors bold, and hear the tale we sing of Dr. D and Scarlet Widow, who are the stormy rings. With clever hands and daring dreams, inventor of soup, held anchor's grasp. In every port, the legend grew, the tales unsurpassed.
Hello, Arachnids. This is your host, D to the D, Dr. D, reaching out through the poorly supervised Spanish Main. Today, I am joined by the newest member of the Arachne crew. Her name's Emily. We tried to get Emily on here before and had some technical difficulties that I have worked through. So if this audio sounds different for whatever reason, there's a reason. But I wanted to make sure we got Emily on here. That's past tense. You're already here. She's yet again wearing the same shirt she was wearing last time. She's wearing the same Royal shirt. Port so Royal. You're a big fan of it. But we love Port Royal here, which we'll talk about in a second. But Emily is one of the model designers for Firelock Games, and she is probably responsible for the next wave of stuff that's coming up here pretty soon, hopefully early next year, 2026. And I knew that I wanted to get her and Dan on here to talk about being a model creator. So this episode and the previous episode might have some overlap in that there's going to be obviously some overlap because they have the same job and we're talking about the same stuff. But I did think it might be interesting to see and hear how two different people kind of reach the same destination, you know? We've been playing a lot of Silent Hill lately, so every person that walks through Silent Hill has a different story, but they all, generally speaking, by the end of it, are totally insane. So hopefully by the end of this episode, you're not insane, but at least you're more well-informed. So that's my impression. So Emily, welcome to the crew.
Happy to be here.
Emily's adorable. So today on Arachne, we're going to be talking to Emily about becoming a model designer. Maybe we can pull some secrets out of her for stuff, you know, in the near future. Who knows? And we're probably just going to generally nerd out. I will say in the previous episode with Dan, I totally lost my marbles just because I thought that it was one of the coolest under the cover, you know, under the hood kind of conversations that I think I've ever had on the show. And it was really cool to hear the industry stuff. I have no doubt that Emily's going to be just as interesting. But first, let me thank the patrons. Cyril S., Derek S., Quimby, Nick B., and Aleph is the way. Really appreciate you helping us financially secure this podcast. I've been having a real tough time with Adobe, so I need to figure out an alternative. Adobe's... Emily, do you have to use Adobe?
Yeah.
It's kind of a bug.
Yeah. Thankfully, I don't have to use it too much, but...
Yeah. So she's got it all figured out. And of course, Arachne is a part of the Professional Casual Network. If you'd like to support the network, please sign up on the Patreon or purchase some hot swag at Streamlabs, Professional Casual Network 1. Personally sponsored by Monument Hobbies. I use their paints for pretty much everything. Lately, it's been a lot of Firelock stuff, funnily enough, so... I'm sure me and Emily can vibe on that. And of course, if you use the code Professional Casual, check out and get yourself a swanky discount if you want to join us in that. And of course, you can join us on the Twitch stream where I very commonly, again, paint Firelock stuff. And we are usually doing that on Mondays, Sundays, and Thursdays around 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. And of course, if everybody's been asking me to paint models for them lately, the queue has been getting kind of crazy. Baron of Dice makes some of the coolest dice in the biz. They do make stuff for Blood and Plunder and Oak and Iron. Use the code Arachne to get yourself a swanky little discount. And enough about all that stuff. Let's start talking to Emily. She came all the way here from, I'm assuming, sunny Florida, I'm assuming. Yeah, seems like everybody. It seems like Firelock is centrally located in the Miami area.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I, as a Floridian, grew up 5 hours north. I grew up in the Orlando area. It's about a five-hour drive from Orlando to Miami. It is a not insignificant distance. So if you've ever been to Florida, you might think Miami. It's kind of like New York City, where everybody thinks New York City is all of New York. There's a lot of Northerners up here think like Miami is just Florida. It's not. There's a lot of other places. And so whenever we have somebody new come on, we always want to talk about origin stories. So Emily, please do us the honor of telling us your nerd origin story. Go.
My nerd origin story. Okay. Well. I've been working at Firelock for about a year or a little more than a year now. But before that, I was actually living in Montreal for 3 years because I was working on movies. I was an animator for movies. And then a few months before going up to Montreal, I was working with Firelock. And then a little bit before that, I was in art school in Orlando, actually. I went to Full Sail.
Yeah, so, Full Sail. Woohoo!
Yeah.
There's plenty of people from there.
Yeah, so I was at Full Sail and I graduated middle of COVID, So when I was in art school, I mainly studied like sculpting and modeling, and then a little bit of animation because they teach you kind of everything. And when I graduated, I worked for Firelock as a part-time actually for a few months. And then I moved up to Montreal where I was working in animation for big movies for a few years. So I worked on like the live action for Pinocchio. I worked on the live action Snow White, which we're not going to talk about.
A little controversy on that one.
Yeah. I worked on Ant-Man Quantumania. I worked a little bit on Kraven.
I love that movie, by the way.
Yeah. I worked on the towers that start like flying in the sky with the noodles arms. I worked on some of those.
Cool.
Yeah. And then I worked at the studio is called MPC. So they work on a lot. They've done a lot of like live action stuff. So I was there for almost 2 years, and then I moved to like a smaller studio up in Montreal where I worked on a dinosaur documentary, which is so cool. So I worked on baby T-Rex and, you know, there was and Montesaurus. Yeah. Freaking
That's
out.
That's
so if you, yeah, if you look up, I think it's T-Rex Giant Films. It's 2024. It came out last year. I worked on that and that was a blast. So yeah, but it's the grass is always green on the other side, right? Like I was working on animation and I missed modeling and sculpting so much. And now I'm like sculpting and modeling and I'm doing all this stuff and I kind of miss animation.
Have you found over the years if you prefer one over the other? Now that you've done plenty of time with both.
I love being a generalist almost. So I guess I can do a little bit of everything. Like if you ask me to do some rigging or, you know, like painting or stuff like that, I can do it. It's not my strength. I think my strengths are definitely like sculpting and modeling and like animation. Those are my two like favorite things.
Sure. So, okay.
Yeah.
I already got a couple questions that we need to get out of the way. You're walking around Full Sail. Full Sail is a pretty fairly sized campus. It's pretty big. It's not like small by any means. It's the middle of Orlando.
Yeah.
Were you just walking in the quad one day and then Mike Tunez was like sitting there with a brochure, you know, with like a flyer, like in the
Funny
quad?
Funny enough, I know the owner of Firelock, like Alex. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know him through a family friend. So they were like, oh, you should talk to him. He has like a studio. See if maybe you could find something. It was like right out of school. Mm-hmm. So I went and I showed them my portfolio. I talked to Mike and Dan, like right outside of school. And they were like, oh yeah, you have some skills. we can work with this.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, and even through my time up in Montreal, like I kept in touch with Alex all the time. He was all really nice. And so when I got back, I was like, well, I have these skills. Do mm-hmm. you need them? Can you use them?
Now, have you mostly stuck to the historical stuff or have you designed models that are from like other genres?
Well, I mean, for work, I mainly stick to the historical stuff, you know, but outside of work, I have been doing a little bit of my own stuff. Mm-hmm. And with Arja and the Brigands of Arja, like, we kind of stepped outside of the historical. We went more right. fantasy, you know. So I was really happy with those models. Like, the Mimic, I worked on the Mimic, the Scorpion, the Spider, the Ice Scourge. There's something else I did. But yeah, so it was really fun kind of stepping outside of the historical accurate part and just kind of making a monster, you know? And even my own little outside projects, I'm trying to do stuff as well.
Because Dan had said something very similar in that. It sounds like Dan has been around maybe a little longer than you.
Yeah, I think he's been there close to 5 years or so. A lot longer.
So that's not even that long in the grand scheme of things. Like of life, you know. You figure humans usually live to be like 60 or 70, you know, or 80. So you figure only 5 years. So how long have you been there?
I've been like full time working at Firelock maybe since August of last year. So
You're very well, not very new, but that's really cool.
Yeah. So you know, but with my time there, we've done like so much stuff. We're so ahead. I'm so excited for everybody to see our stuff coming up next year. It's going to be awesome.
Because Dan was he made a bunch of allusions to the fact that it seems like you guys are like at least like 2 or 3 years ahead of schedule based on like what we see. Yeah. So like, as far as now, thankfully, for you and Dan, at least, you guys don't make many plastic kits. I know that you guys had just ventured into the multi-part sculpts for Port Royal. Mm-hmm. Now, have you found that you enjoyed, like, because you don't have to worry about, like, machining, you know, where it's like, oh, we got to worry about, like, 15 different attachment points and blah, blah, blah. Did you guys, well, I guess the point I'm getting to is, did you guys develop the plastic kits that also came out? Was that, like, also you, or was that, like, a different group of designers?
I'm not too sure. I didn't work on those. Maybe I think Dan might have worked on those, but before Daniel joined, there was like a different modeler, and they didn't. We've definitely like gotten better. Like our stuff looks better now. Okay.
That's undeniable.
Like it's a lot cleaner now than it does. So that's why
there's a dog in the background.
That's why we're kind of re-releasing our second wave next year. You guys are gonna get blown away by those. Those are gonna be awesome.
Emily, I'm scared. I can already tell I'm being pulled into the realm of like wanting to just like talk about literally anything. All right, let me try and keep it on topic. So you're working there. You come here. You start working for Firelock. You're making all this stuff. You're probably at least a bunch of years ahead of time. I'm assuming there's a lot of it you can't tell us about. Obviously, that's fine. I don't necessarily blame you. Okay.
Well, if you ask. Oh,
okay. Okay. Just tell me. In the near future, is there going to be a Francis Drake model at some point? We need Francis Drake.
Oh, man. I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure.
I mean, listen, Francis Drake was like the pirate king. He's hooking up with queens and sailing around. And there's a video game character from Uncharted who says he's, you know, like related to him. Come on, Francis Drake.
Well, I do have to say for our pirates coming out, we got some good characters in there. We have some interesting characters in there, though.
So as of time of recording, Blood and Pigment just released the rules for Bartholomew de Portuguese. I don't know how to say these things in native tongues or whatever, but really cool sculpt. Obviously, whenever Blood and Pigment puts out their articles and all that, they actually show the pieces of art that a lot of these sculpts are based off of, you know, because they're like million-year-old pieces of art. Now, in your background, you didn't say anything about like, oh yeah, you know, I was like, I loved history and I read a bunch of books about this and that or whatever. How did you find the interface of like designing historical things?
Honestly, history's never been my strong point. I love fantasy, probably. Like that's probably what got me into wanting to go into art school was a few things that I watched and I was like, that's what I want to make. So I like the historical. Like being historically accurate. Like when I see pictures or portraits of like these characters from back then, I love focusing on the tiny little buttons or like the little details and stuff, even though you don't see them.
No.
I'm thinking about them. I'm like, oh, I really want to put that there.
Listen, there are button counters in every historical game, and you are fulfilling their dreams, okay? Just so you know, that coat has to have 5 buttons. That's what they were made in that one town in Argentina or whatever. That's where they were made.
The best thing ever is getting a picture, like a reference, and our historical, like our historians being like, just copy this picture. And I'm like, oh, ecstasy. I love that. I love just having a picture I can copy. Like, yeah.
So at least in that type of thinking, we know that the Henry Morgan is very similar to the piece of art, him.
Mm.
And then the Bartholomew de Portuguese, I know that he's pretty similar to his piece of art. Are there any other notable people you can think of with their pieces of art? Maybe people can kind of suspect what's coming.
I did work on the young Henry Morgan one.
Absolutely one of my favorite models, by the way.
Yeah.
His little double capes. Oh, you're talking about buttons? These girl, I noticed his two little back cape things. I'm like, I've never seen this before. I don't know what he's wearing, but I love it.
Yeah, and the good thing is we do work with historians. So every time my brain is like, ooh, this looks nice. Let's go make something that looks nice. They're like, calm down. Calm down. We need to make sure it works for their time. We need to make sure this works. And I'm like, oh, but then I'm like, okay, it makes sense. It's fine.
Now, do you think you personally will, because obviously with Warlord, it's Brigands of Arja comes out. You are probably going to have a lot more creative freedom, I imagine, to kind of just create whatever you want. So I'm assuming that excites you beyond all.
Oh, yeah, it was. I was asking Mike, hey, Mike, what kind of monsters do you want me to make? He's like, make anything you want. And I'm like, that is very dangerous. That is very dangerous to be telling me. You can't just tell me to make whatever I want.
Now, is there like a limitation on size? Like, what's the biggest you could make like a monster?
Well, yeah, for the bigger monsters, it was like a 40 millimeter, base. He's like, just make sure it fits on that and we're good.
So you can make it as tall as you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the snake, the basilisk, the cyclops and the wendigo, they're really tall compared to the other ones that I made. So as long as they can like balance on the base. Like, it's not going to be toppling over that bad. Like, you know, as long as it works and it's printable, we can do it.
So can you make, like, some kind of, like, evil demon giraffe?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Vampire yeah. giraffe near future.
Yeah. As you can tell, I kind of, with, like, the scorpion and the spider and the mimic, I was like, let's make them as creepy as possible. I love that.
Yeah, because obviously you can see a lot of these sculpts on the Kickstarter, which I believe as of now is still going, I think. It might have already ended, but if you go in there, they have a very, the guy who made Conan the Barbarian, Howard, oh gosh, he's totally escaping my name, Howard, I forget his last name, but there's very much a very, like, low-tech level, low fantasy, would you say that's safe to say? Have you been able to like make wizards and all that stuff?
We did. Yeah. There's, I don't know if they got unlocked, but there will be. Like Daniel made one and I made one. So we both got our little wizard in there, a spellcaster in there.
Yeah. The mimic especially is worthy of attention because it's very Dark Souls creepy.
Yeah.
It's coming to get you vibe with the little tumor sticking out.
I'm happy you said Dark Souls because I love Dark Souls and Elden Ring. So,
obviously, you pulled it out of the nightmares of the guy who made it again. Pulled it out of his dark mind. It's also very good. And then, so the Wendigo, very like slender, many tall, skinny, creepy thing going on.
Yeah, Daniel made the Wendigo, and he actually made two versions of that one. He made like a really chunky big dude and then he made a very slender one, but we ended up going with the slender one.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. And actually that raises a question that people may not know. Like, let's just say hypothetically you're like, hey, we got to release something, could you go back to that old sculpt and be like, yeah, let's make like an alternate sculpt for the Wendigo and make him the big chunk boy?
We could, if Mike and Alex and them like jumped on it, they were like, we need something, so we could technically like reuse them if we needed it in the future. At least for some pieces, you know, just change some parts and then release it.
Yeah, there are some sorcerers. Yeah, they did not get unlocked, but yes, there were. One of the next stretch goal was going to be a sorcerer. Okay, so we can expect wizard powers in our games of Brigands.
Excellent. Yeah.
Okay, so obviously you've answered a couple of the questions. I do think it's funny that just how small the world is, where you know a guy who knows a guy.
Yeah, was a coincidence. It turned out great though. I'm like so grateful that I get to work. They're like all so nice, Mike and Daniel. And I don't know if you guys know about Lily, but they're like awesome.
I haven't met anyone other than Mike. I think he's the only employee. And I guess I kind of met Rufus. Like Rufus has been on the show, but I've like never met him in person. But anyway, so back to the historical aspect of it. So you're not like super into history. You've been making these historical models. Has there been anything that you found very interesting, at least from a historical standpoint? Maybe not even just like, maybe specifically like the way they dress and all that. Have you really found
the fashion? Oh, yeah. The Dutch by far have the coolest style.
Oh God, they're so good. The hobo, they look like hobos. They look like trained hobos.
I love their little pants. Their little pants are so cute. Apparently the French are just like, they just copy everybody else. The Spanish obviously have a cool style. I worked on the two horse commanders for Blood and Bayonets, the ones that you can download, the two of the horse. I really like those, their outfits too. I really love those outfits. Those are awesome.
Now, do you think you're going to like the more, because obviously, Firelock does not make a line of models for Napoleonics because it is a very saturated market, because you got, like, Perry Brothers and blah, blah, blah. Do you think you'd have more fun with the parade-style military look, or do you like the individuality of, like, a seed, you know, like a pirate guy?
I don't know. I love, like, making, like, a specific named hero character where they're, like, their attire is exclusive to them. I love that kind of uniqueness to it. It gives me something new, almost, instead of making, like, a unit where they're all kind of similar. They have a similar style. A hero character, I love that, because then you can add a lot of details in there that are specific to them. Like, nobody will really catch it, but you know it's there kind of thing.
So it's funny, something just occurred to me. So obviously, when I first jumped into this game, it was March of this year. And the very first thing I told myself was, wow, there's a lot of individual sculpts for a lot of these units. But it's funny how there's not that many different sculpts for leaders. And that, you know, there's like a billion different named commanders in the books and all that. But you're supposed to use the same generic commander for all of them or whatever. There's a few exceptions, you know, with your like legendary leaders. Around that time must have been when your fingers and the stuff you were making got put out there. Because now all of a sudden, with this new book coming out, there's a ton of new hero sculpts. Now, are you like, how much of those are you responsible for? Is it like 50-50?
Oh, man, I don't know. Like, when I tell you, since I started to now, I've worked on so many models. So many. Like, I can't remember which ones I've worked on. I've literally worked on so many. So has Daniel. Like, we've both been, like, we've been killing it. We've been absolutely cooking. But, yeah, I mean, I like getting unique. Like, our historians would just send a bunch of pictures, and I'll be like, well, this one looks like it would work. Can I use this? Would this one be, like, unique to a special, like, commander, you know? They'll be like, yeah, that's fine. And then we'll just add little extra details to spice it up. Just, like, even if it's, like, decorations on their sword, like, the sword hilts, just to make them more pizzazz, give them more pizzazz.
Sure. So I'm a big Henry Morgan fan. This is what I hypothesize. This is what I have to say for your next Kickstarter. Make sure to put this on the block, okay? You need Henry Morgan pulling his sword out of a stone, Excalibur style, okay? That needs to be a Kickstarter goal, and it needs to be like an objective marker or something. Because his sword is a special item in Port Royal. You need to find it in the stone. It's not buried at sea at all. That's actually what Excalibur was, even though the times don't, you know, the time frame doesn't work there. It's fine. You need to be in a stone. That needs to be an objective.
Okay, we have to ask Mike. Okay, Mike, please. Mike, please.
Put it on the notepad. It's fine. Okay, so yeah, that's interesting. And so with you working with the historians, and obviously with your love, your newfound. Okay, actually, before I even go into this, the Dutch. Whose idea was it to give them all like pot bellies with their fancy?
Okay. Man, who was it? It was probably one of the historians, honestly. I think that was one of them, because we have like our base model that we use to make sure everything's like to scale. And so the base model's like ripped, you know, average. And then one of the historians was like, but we need to make him like, we need to give him some girth. And I was like, okay. I'm going to give it a little chunk.
So, Emily, I'm not sure what your dating life is like, but I'm here to tell you that being ripped is not average. It's not common or whatever. I don't think being ripped is average. I'd say that's quite an exceptional thing, actually.
If they're all on the boat, I'm sure they must be, like, climbing poles and swinging swords. They've got to be ripped somehow.
Yeah, but they're probably barely eating in their – you know what? I would imagine if you were a sailor on an English vessel, you're barely eating, you're barely drinking water, and your dinner is probably, like, a cigar or a cigarette. And I'm sure they're not eating very well.
Romanticized pirates.
There you go. And that's why the Dutch are the pot-bellied murder train hobos. That's the romanticized version of the Dutch. Whenever I think of Dutch, whenever I think of the Netherlands, I think murder hobo.
Daniel would be right on that same boat with me, though. He'd say the Dutch are the cool ones.
That's exactly what he said. They're the best sculpts in your range, and I love them. So, as of time of recording, of course, I just entered my ship. I didn't send it to you. I sent it to Dan, but I had a ship. I had a light frigate covered in Dutchmen because I have a little Dutch – I say little. I have a Dutch army, and I almost won. Well, I say I won, the painting award for a big painting convention that was up here in the Northeast. I'll have to send it to you. But it's, yeah, those models are absolutely stunning. Anybody that sees them, they're just like, what is this?
Oh, that's awesome.
Where's my droopy top hat?
Yeah.
What's up with this? Oh, and okay, so you are like the little thing, the little attention pieces. We're going back to the Dutch. So on the Dutch models, in their top hats, I know they're not top hats, I don't know the technical term for them. There's this little, like, droopy, what kind of looks like a bullet casing is the only way I could describe it. What is that?
Oh, man.
So they got the hat, they got the band, and then inside the band, there's this, like, little thing. It looks like, I don't know, like a little cigar stogie. I don't know what it is.
Oh, man, I have to see a picture of it. I don't know. There's the one hat that I'm thinking of, but that one's coming out for second wave, so you haven't seen it yet.
So I do have the, and I'm going to mispronounce this because I'm not Dutch, the Enterploeg. I know that I am getting the new sculpt sent to me. I think it's in the mail right now.
I think I worked on those.
Yeah, great. I saw the sculpt and I was like, the double axe guy, I was like, that guy looks sick. That guy looks sick. Yeah, they'll be on a blog post near you soon.
Yay.
Right, I need to know this, so you know, we're gonna do this live. I need to know what that little thing in their hat is. Just please let me go to Firelock's website, please. Just on the Ditch. I'm gonna send you this link. I'm gonna put this link in the chat. So if you go there, it's the guy pointing the pistol on the top of the picture. There's like this little, white thing that's like over the brim of his hat.
Ooh, these guys. I think I remade these for second wave. Let's see. This is second.
Yeah, the Zealanders. The guy that's pointing? Yes. So the guy at the very top, with he's pointing the pistol over his little top hat, like the brim of it. There's like this little
like a pipe
that's like in the band of his hat. I'm like, what is that thing?
It might be a pipe.
That might actually that's a good guess.
Yeah.
That would be good. That's a good idea. Okay, well there you go. I'm pleased. But anyway, yeah, you guys need to calm down given all these Dutch people so much swag. I mean, listen. There's only so many ladies in the Caribbean, and we cannot let the Dutch have all of them when they're strutting in with their
stuff. Oh, man, I've been begging since I got here, I'm like, we need to make some women, please. Let's make some women, please.
So that is interesting in that in this time period, there's only like, I'm gonna get skewered for this at some point, but the two very most well-known women in the pirate era are obviously Anne and Mary, and they have their own sculpts. So the question would be, where would you insert more women? Because I know that Firelock's trying to keep it historical. There's any female in the crew is probably disguised as a man.
Well, maybe they.
Why don't like, they do more stuff like governor's daughters or like way, even more like townsfolk?
You know, ones? I've been asking. I'm like, please let me. I want to work on all the women that I can, just to change it up from all these sweaty men. You know, like on a boat. I do have to say, their pirates is going to be interesting. No spoilers.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm already very excited. Okay, so we totally deviated from what I was trying to say. Yeah, so is there a particular thing in history that you've really started to grow fondness for? Like, have you discovered a love for, like, I really like the War of Spanish Succession or whatever? Or do you not know? So
even like when I'll be in the middle of sculpting something and I'll send it in our chat, they're like, this one, we're trying to go for like the 1780s. This one's more like 1770s. We're going to have to change it. I'm like, oh, I didn't know there was that much of a difference. I was like, no.
You have to know your. Right. You have to know the line of English
like,
kings
oh, I didn't know.
Off the
I
top of your
of
head at all times in order to sculpt this pirate man. It's very important. Okay, well, that's good to know. So you are obviously a big fan of this. Do you do any freelancing sculpting like on your own? Because I'm assuming Firelock doesn't like hold you, at least Dan, I think he says he does stuff for other people.
I haven't. I mean, I really kind of want to, though. sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe sometimes I just feel like I don't have that much time. And then I also want to do my own projects outside of work. I'm like, there's so many ideas I got. I want to like work on that. But then again, like there's not enough time. And so, I've just been kind of busy, especially in the last few months. But maybe when stuff slows down, maybe next year,
welcome to the world of being an artist.
No. You know?
The ideas and your hands aren't fast enough to do what the
I know. Wants. It's crazy because I'm like, I'm an artist. I can make anything.
You get the analysis paralysis. I can make so you're like, anything. You're so exhausted thinking about
and then
it.
And I don't know what to
make. You're like, I'm going to eat a sandwich and go to bed.
Yeah.
I'm too tired. To
exactly.
Work on
and then I'll start something and then I get distracted. I'm like, oh, wait, but this. And then I never go back to what I was working on. And then.
Let's just say I have a very, I don't know if you can see in the camera. Long lines of stuff that has not yet been painted, but plenty of ideas on how to do it.
Yeah.
So, all right. That's awesome to hear. And so, okay. We're going to, for the most part, we've already burned through all the questions. So now we're going into freestyle land and we're just going to stop talking when I feel like we're done.
Let's
so if, do you know what? If you get tired, you just give me a heads up. If you need to
I love yapping. I can yap all day.
There are some people that listen to the show that can't stand it. And then there are other people who are just like, I could just listen to people talk for hours and hours and hours and hours. All right. So, hypothetically speaking, in the near future, up here in the Northeast, in the Massachusetts area, I would like to do a big map-based campaign thing where every quarter we get together and we play like a game, yada, yada. Now, I want to introduce a fantasy element to it, which is very much based on an RPG that I used to play when I was younger. I say younger. I'm only 32. I don't even know how old I am. So obviously, I haven't been on this all that long. But I want to introduce some fantasy elements because obviously when people see Blood and Plunder, they're like, wow, I really love the pirate era, but there comes a level of mysticism that I think people really enjoy. Stuff like Pirates of the Caribbean is a really good example where you have like a Davy Jones character who's got like, you know, people who live at the bottom of the ocean as crew members or whatever, right? So obviously there's none of that in Blood and Plunder just because of the fact that they're trying to play as a historical game. For you, hypothetically speaking, if you were going to start introducing fantasy elements, what do you think people would go crazy for? In the pirate-y kind of era.
Oh, man. I think as an artist to make, I would love to make, like, siren. I just love making, like, monsters in general, you know? That's easiest. Any artist wants to make monsters. So making, like, sirens or something, you know? Like, a kraken, why not? Right? Just because you said Pirates of the Caribbean, like just Davy Jones's crew, like all the barnacles and tentacles and just making monsters out of like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So Rum and Bones have a line of models called the Deep Ones and they're, you know, Davy Jones is one of them and he's got like a tentacle face holding onto like pistols and swords and all that stuff. So yeah, it's great stuff. Like I think people really eat that kind of stuff up and okay, so the first couple people I got to play Blood and Plunder near me, the very first thing they thought was, I want a ghost boat. I want a ghost pirate boat. And it's just amazing to me that even not as a main line of the game, I'm sure Firelock is sitting there be like, how can we just make a quick buck, make something people really like? They'll be like, let's just make a ghost, some kind of ghost pirate faction or whatever. It doesn't have to be serious. It could just be something they make and have like, you know, like maybe little playful rules or whatever for it, but events don't use them. You know what I mean? I think it's a really interesting avenue for Firelock to go into because it's completely untouched as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I guess we were kind of trying to start like fantasy with Arja. This was like our first step into fantasy, right? And I think we were going to like try testing it out because we did include our undead in there as well. Like it's in the Kickstarter. So that's kind of like our prototype as well. Don't get me wrong. I've been like, so when are we doing the dead people, the Krakens and the stuff for like just taking over a boat? That'd be awesome. But because we've like honed in on being historical, we'd have to see how that would work. Cause maybe it'll upset people, you know?
I mean, there's somebody, but that's exactly what I'm saying is like, if the company makes the rules, but doesn't really like make them official, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, here's a little playful document where it's like blood and fantasy or whatever, you know, it's like, as long as you include it in a separate book, it's almost like, you know, they could get mad, but obviously it's unrealistic, right? But
yeah,
somebody's going to get mad about everything. All right. Have you ever played Sea of Thieves?
I've heard of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying. So obviously, see, a lot of fantasy stuff in there. I would be curious, do you, I'm going to have to send you a picture of it right now, but do you love megalodons? Yes or yes?
It's just so awesome.
They're so cool. They are so absolutely cool.
Underwater anything is just so scary because the water, there's just so much ocean, so much unexplored, just abysses out there that anything can just live out there. Yeah.
You look at that and you don't tell me that's sick.
It's awesome. That would be so fun to make. Monsters are always so fun to make.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, if you were to make that and make it, like, the size of one of the boats,
that
would be amazing.
In theory, that'd be awesome. As to, like, actually print, that'd be a nightmare.
So I've thought about this, right? So I think that there are 3D sculpts out there, or STL files, of Sea of Thieves megalodons. I've been told. I haven't actually found them. But I think they actually print them as, like, the whole shark, you know? That's, like, the whole, like, 3D object. So in the land of sculpting and all that for boats, they call it water lining, which is when you take the sculpt and you like cut it at a certain point where it's like when you put it in the water. Obviously, you don't see the bottom of a boat in the water. Do you think it'd be easier to print that kind of stuff if you waterline it? So like instead of having this whole sculpt, it would only be like the mouth sticking out of the water and then everything like at that level.
I guess it would make it a little bit easier, but it's like the size itself. It still would have to be really big. Especially if it's like attacking a ship, like one of the bigger models of ship, it would still be a big model. So we would still, to print it with resin, we'd have to like split it up into pieces to make it more efficient, right?
Right.
So I mean, but
look at that size comparison that I just sent you. It's not that.
That'd be crazy to have a three to have a monster to print that big.
It's only as big as a galleon. It's not that big. Right. I mean, come on, you know, it's only humongous.
It would be so fun, that's really though. Cool. But a little spoiler, not too much, for one of the games that we're working on that are going to come out like way, 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 way later. There is an animal of bigger variety that we're thinking we want to make. So,
does it live in the water?
No, it is a land creature of a bigger variety. But we'd have to think of like how to print it because they were kind of essential to those people's culture. So
there is a game called Mythic America. Have you ever heard of it? It's okay to say no. So Mythic America is a Native American miniatures game where it's all the different indigenous people of like the different parts of the world, blah, blah, blah. So it's also fantasy. So all of the stories are true. So like all the monsters they believe in are real things, right? So if it has anything to do with I'm going to butcher this. I apologize. I guess it's the sleep deprivation hitting me. I believe that the Puerto Rican area, indigenous people are called Tainau. I'm going to look it up right now.
Taino?
Yes, thank you. Yes. So they love frogs. Is it a giant frog?
No.
Okay. Well, I tried that. Well, I guess that's a water creature, kind of.
It's not a water creature that I'm talking about. It's a big mammal. But the thing is, we're trying, because it's so big, we'd have to figure out how we would print them to make it efficient to print and not as expensive to print. But if we did them, they'd be really awesome.
Yeah, I have no doubt.
Really awesome. So
well, listen, next time I see Mike, I'm going to walk up to him. Probably going to be at Adepticon. I'm going to stand really uncomfortably close.
Yes.
Okay. He's not going to see me coming. I'm just going to walk up and I'm just going to put my face really close to his chest, right?
Yeah. About
nipple line.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to whisper, "Hey, Mike, you need to let Emily make a megalodon."
Yes. Yes. Please let him, please do that. Just ambush him, please.
So everybody that's listening to this episode, if you go to the Firelock booth at any con that they're there, I need you to stand really uncomfortably close to Mike and just whisper, "Hey, let Emily make a megalodon.
Please let Emily make sea monsters. Please
let her make stick monsters." Okay. I got to stand up. This interview is still going, so we're going to cut this part out, but I'm going to show you some stuff that I have gotten.
Whoa, what is that?
So this is a Kraken that I picked up. Some guy was selling it on a Facebook on Facebook Marketplace. And so, funnily enough, in the Firelock Discord, I asked, hey, has anybody made rules for Krakens, right? Or any other kind of like giant scary monsters from the ocean. So the point I'm getting to here is, like, there might be a version of the world where I ask you to make these things because I want to use them for my little narrative thing.
Yeah.
So I want giant sea monsters, darn it, and I'm going to get them. Actually, which might be an interesting thing to explore in this interview, which is, let's just say I'm just some guy. Let's just call that guy Dr. D, right? You know, hypothetically speaking. If Dr. D, which is hypothetically me, was like, hey, I want a model sculpted. How would they go about doing it? Like, where can you find freelance sculptors? And like, what would it cost, hypothetically speaking?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I'm sure Daniel would have like a better idea because he does a lot more freelance, whereas I'm just a little baby sculptor. There's a lot of artists you can find on ArtStation. I will go and look at their shop and just buy brushes and stuff for me to use on ZBrush. ArtStation would be a good place. There's another one. I forgot what it's called, but you can commission artists on that one as well. I forgot what it's called. I'm not too familiar with like how to go out and about and look for artists to commission, but if you found someone on like Instagram or ArtStation or X that you like their art, you could probably ask them and see what they would go for.
And hypothetically speaking, again, let's just say hypothetically I was like, hey, I'm going to ask you to do this thing. What is a time frame that would take for somebody to like finish a model?
I would say it depends on like you as a client. A better client would give you like...
No, it's not me. This is hypothetical.
Yeah. Like if I got a lot of reference, if you told me exactly what you wanted, like, oh, you gave me like 5 pictures and on each picture, like I want this, I want exactly this. I want exactly that. I want this. I want that. If you're like certain on what you want, I can do that on a weekend. Like it's not that bad. Now, if you're giving me a bunch of pictures, like I just want, these are the vibes. And that's it. I'm going to be confused. So that's why when we're working on historical stuff, if you give me a picture and you're like, just copy this picture, it's perfect. It's exactly what you need. I'm like, okay, solid. I'll just go do my own thing and I'll come back and it'll be done. Like it'll be fast. Like the problem comes back when I do something and then I get notes and then I'm going back and then going forth. And like, you can't really make up your mind, you know? So that's what wastes time.
I guess in some ways that might help you later, right? Because there are ideas you could put on a model, and if they don't like it now, they could be like, hey, now we are making a model that's 1680s. We want that shirt or whatever it is you did.
Yeah, like on the Henry Morgan one, actually the sleeves, I had that on a different model and I didn't use it. And then I brought him. I'm like, okay, let's place it on my hand. Let's put them here. So yeah, like between Daniel and I, we have a giant folder with just assets that we just reuse all the time.
And he thanked you specifically for that vault in our interview.
Oh,
because
really?
He was like, I never had time to make this thing until Emily got here. And now I finally have the time to do it. So thank Emily for this.
Oh, yeah. The two of us, we've just been compiling assets. So like our units, when Mike asks us to make something new, we can finish off like a set of 4 in like less than a week. Like we can do it. We can pump them out really fast because we have made so much stuff. It's just a matter of just putting it together like a puzzle. Like it's not even that bad.
And you may not be exposed to this part of the industry as much, but so it takes you like, hypothetically, again, I say, hey, I want this. You finish it in a weekend because you know what you're looking for. Why is it that there is a like a year or 2 year gap between finishing a model on a weekend to it being released as like a full product? Do you have any like experience on that middle zone ground?
Do you mean like in regards of like me making a model and like it being released like Kickstarter, like at Firelock?
Sure, or anything like that.
So, is that an example?
Yeah, that's a good example.
Well, I guess being at Firelock, it's just a matter of when Mike and Alex want to release the game, because we can't just like flood like three games in like 3 months. Like that's not gonna work, right? So it's just a matter of spacing it out and being able to just advertise it correctly and make sure it's out there for people to know about. We can't just like start flooding it. So that's why the models that are coming out for second wave, it should be coming up in a few months, right? But those models, Daniel and I worked on them back in like April. So those are coming out almost a year later. But it's just because we've been more efficient. We've gotten more efficient with making stuff so we can pump stuff out just very quick. So, yeah.
And so obviously with Firelock is not a Games Workshop. Now, actually, that's a good question. In this industry, what have you learned from the Firelock standpoint? Because obviously Firelock is not like the big fish in the ocean, which is an apt example given the you setting.
Yeah.
But, like, since you've been in this industry, have you learned about things like Games Workshop or, Privateer Press or these other companies? Have you really rubbed shoulders with other designers who are like, yeah, I work for this big company?
Not really. I know Firelock's just, it knows its audience and caters to their audience. And that's what's good about it. Like that's what it knows who is catering to. Yeah. And I know like for the fantasy stuff that we've made, it's very competitive. Everybody wants to do fantasy, right? So it's how we can make it we can have our own twist on it. And the good thing about Firelock is our game rules are fun. Like the game itself, not including the minis, it's already fun and interesting and unique on its own. So I guess that really is what sets us apart from our competitors, right? And plus our minis are awesome.
You just walked into that room with swag. Did you guys all hear that? Just walked in, just pushed the doors open, be like, I now own this room. It's like our game is better than everybody else. Everybody sit down. I mean, you're not wrong though. That's
it's okay to be correct.
So how often do you play? Because obviously, like, I know Dan, he's busy. He's got like a family, yada, yada. How often do you actually play the games that you design the models for? Like, is it exciting to like move pieces? Or
you're going to absolutely kill me, but I haven't played any of our games.
Sheesh.
But you can blame Mike for that.
I can't. Why is that?
We've never gotten around to it in studio. I remember way back when we did play a tabletop game, but it wasn't Firelock. And now I'm like, when am I going to get the invite? I need to play some Firelock in here. We need to take a team break day and just play all our games.
You call that a powwow. I've been told that Mike Tunez is absolutely obsessed with Battletech. I've heard that from multiple sources.
Yeah.
Now, do you could design a battle. See, that's okay. Listen.
Listen. See, the world is my oyster.
What you do is you design some kind of battle tech mini form and you say, listen, you got to give me a demo for, Blood and Plunder, but you're not going to get this model, Mike. See, this is where we are. This is where we are.
Blackmailing right Mike.
Exactly. Because I feel like you could get it from Alex. That'd be easy. Because apparently you know him through like the family. He would do anything for you. But
yeah.
Mike, he's a tough sell. He's a tough sell.
We need to take we just need to take a team powwow one day and just play Port Royal. Mm-hmm. Be like, what are we making these minis for? Although I'm here for the minis.
Obviously.
I'm here for
them. All right. So let's go creative. Out of all the lines that you've seen for the Firelock, at least for Blood and Plunder, if you pick another one, that's probably fine. But which faction do you think you would play? Other than Dutch, we know it's Dutch. But...
the Spanish.
Really?
Maybe the Spanish. Just my bloodline. my ancestors proud.
Listen, the Spanish love to stab. They have an affinity for stabbing.
I see no problem.
Yep, apparently not.
It's a great time.
They love to stab. You know, rifles, that's for rich folk. I'm going to stab somebody with a sharp stick.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's efficiency.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, well, that's good to know. Okay, so where do we even go from there? So, yeah, you got the second wave coming out, and what can we say you worked on for as a sculptor? Because it sounds like you did some more Dutch. Anything else that and Henry Morgan?
Honestly, like almost half of those minis, we split those minis. Daniel and I split those minis like half and half. The 50% will be Daniel's, 50% will be mine. Like, we absolutely cooked. We were cooking with those. Cooking with those minis.
So look, it's funny.
Yeah, they look great.
I did the new freebooters, which I think he said he did. I think he said that, and I sent him a picture of it. I was like, because it's in the article for Blood and Plunder. If anybody wants to see them, I sent it to him, and he was like, "Oh, those are the ones I was the most disappointed in because there was like, I guess at the beginning there was more constraints,
and then
it seems like it loosened up.
Because those were one of our earlier sets that were. Those were done a while ago, and then we kind of just tweaked them a little bit and then added it to the second wave. So those were those aren't kind of the new gen ones. That was like almost an older part version, and then we just included those. So they still look good, but
they do. They still look
ones that we worked on this year are gonna kill it.
So actually, that's a good question then. So when the previews for these started coming out, the Marineros were I believe they were the very first models that Blood and Pigment showed off. In the time frame, when were they designed? So if we can assume the freebooters are the beginning, where were the Marineros? Because they look different. They look a lot more dynamic.
The newer ones?
Those
were probably in April. I think I worked on those. Yeah, I did work on those.
They look great.
I worked.
They look
very
good.
Thanks.
Because obviously, everything that I've seen, there's a very obvious improvement in regards to the dynamics. I'm going to always say this wrong. They look much more like they're in like movement a lot more.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the freebooters, they're a lot more like standing there.
Yeah, I think a part of that is because we were able to compile all our assets, it saves us time from working on something that, you know, we could just reuse from another model. Like, we don't have to focus on that anymore. We can add more because we already have like a base for it. We're not starting from scratch, which means we can do a lot more in a lot less time. Yeah. So yeah, like even since then, we're on a new game that we're working on that'll come out maybe in 2027. We're trying to streamline our pipeline to make it even faster. That way, in the same time it took us before, we can do even more detail and even, you know, just make them look so much better and more lifelike, you know, realistic, dynamic, obviously. Yeah. So we're just trying to make it easier to make it better. Wow, that's all we're doing. Even now, we're
saying, that's all. Yeah. Just trying to make everything better all the time.
For yeah, us. Exactly. We're just trying to not waste time on like the doing stuff from scratch. Like, it's pointless, right? Just let's take it from somewhere else and make it better, you know? Yeah.
And so it did click to me, thinking back on my 50 Fathoms knowledge, there was an expansion, expansion might be the word, where Captain Kidd, his daughter, comes into the world. So there is... I don't actually know if she did that on purpose or if that was just like a part of the setting, but I agree. There needs to be female pirates. Mike, you got to dig. You really got to dig. Find the least excuse to get some female captains in the game.
We tried a little bit with the pirates. So,
I mean, Anne and Mary look great. You just make some alternate sculpts for Mary and Anne.
We could. I think there was an alternate sculpt we did for something else. But yeah, I'm always like, so when are the women showing up? Please.
Where the ladies at?
Where the ladies at?
So I do. Come on. I mean, you gotta have like a blister that's just Jack, Mary, and Anne, and call it like, you know, love is a battlefield or something. Because, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a marketing. I'm a marketing. I just got hired by Frylock. I'm marketing now. It's me.
There we go. Jeez.
I'll use my mic bucks for all my future expenses.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I am totally out of ideas of what to talk about, but that was very informative. Is there anything else that you think that people who are listening to this might find interesting?
Oh, man.
Take all the time you need. Very open-ended question.
I don't know. Because of all this, I've gotten more into 3D printing. So now that I do my own 3D prints, I know what I need to fix. I know what I need to do in 3D to make sure it works. Or like how big and how small I can make details. That way that everybody else can see them and paint them. Because making details is so much fun. But if you're not going to see them, and if it's hard to paint, then why bother? But yeah, now that I have my 3D printer, I've been cooking with that 3D printer too. I've been making stuff.
Do you paint at all?
I just got like an airbrush kit to at least start priming. I do not like painting. It's like my actual weakness. My actual weakness is painting. So I don't know.
That's why people like me exist.
I don't know if I could like sit there and start painting minis. My hands would shake too much. Like,
hey, listen, all it takes is like 10 years of experience. And then you get to the point where you're like, you know what? Maybe my stuff's not that bad. That's all. That's all it takes. Just a decade of hard work, of constant, self torment.
Yeah. Mike gave us a compliment the other day. He's like, yeah, I was able to paint your guys' new minis and they look so good. Like the details. If you guys made them like that, and I was able to paint them so well because of your details, kudos.
Listen, I am determined to make your models look as good as possible. You said, this is my dream, okay? Let's go on a journey. This is my dream. I would like to see my paint jobs pop up on the Firelock website. That's my dream.
That would be so cool. But we got the one artist that painted our stuff for Arja, mm-hmm. and they looked awesome.
They do look pretty good.
You guys that paint minis, amazing. I don't know how you have the eyesight for that, but that's amazing.
It's the fact that my eyes are only 33 years old. I'm hoping I don't lose that as I get older.
Phenomenal work. I don't know how you guys get the pupils and the eyeballs for like the tiny little characters, but y'all do it, and that's awesome.
It's called a very small brush. It's a very tiny brush. And obviously anything that will slow down your paint from drying really helps with small brushes. So if anybody out there is having trouble painting eyes, micro pens are really good. And I would definitely recommend some kind of, depending on where you live, because if you live like in Arizona, your paint dries really quick on the wick. Some kind of like drying retardant, any kind of like chemical that'll stop it from actually drying. That's what a lot of the big fancy painters will use to like paint like lines and stuff of like fancy artwork on people's jackets and stuff like that. It's a big freehander thing. So if you notice that you're having trouble with eyes, some kind of thing to prevent your, because water only does so much, some kind of thing you can mix into the paint. That's very, very helpful. And ProAcryl is probably some of the best.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I need to get into minis painting. It's like paint my own stuff.
I mean, especially if you get into your own 3D. So, like, what do you do when you print your models? Do you just have somebody else paint it, and do you just hit them with the whip?
I don't know. I print them, and then for the last set that I did, I just primed them, and I'm like, good to go. Good to go. You're good to go. Look, I have, like, a big version of my Mimic on my desk. So I just airbrushed him with primer. And then I just sit him on my desk. I'm like, that's good enough.
It's a Kurosawa thing. He's the guy that makes the Japanese movies that are all in black and white.
Exactly.
He's in a noir movie. He went total Sin City.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. All right. So actually, it did occur to me, if somebody, and I did ask Dan this, so it might be kind of similar, but let's just say, again, somebody's listening to this and they're like, I really want to get into this. What is a good course of action to get into something like 3D? Like, you know, designing models.
Like sculpting and, you know?
Yes.
Well, I think if you're starting out and you're testing, a good, easy, free way of getting into modeling and sculpting would be Blender. I don't have experience with Blender. when I went to art school, they literally just threw me in the deep end. They're like, here's Maya, here's ZBrush, figure it out and do something with it. Right. But Blender has a lot of online resources that you can use. You could follow a lot of artists. I get reels and like videos of just tools, basic tools that you can use. I do have to say, like, it's going to start off bad. I promise it's going to be bad. But you have to, like, push through it. I know so many times it's been like, oh, this actually looks like a ball of mud. But you have to just keep pushing on. You have to, I guess a good rule as well is picking your reference and knowing how to analyze reference. And if you can stop seeing the world as like, oh my God, this is like such a complicated, like, just a face, you know, like there's so much in there. If you could just like break it down into smaller shapes, just seeing it as circles and squares, triangles, and taking it one shape at a time, you'll find yourself a lot less overwhelmed with what all you have to do. So I think if you're starting off, that's a good way. You have to just keep pushing on with it. Like, you have to keep trying.
And that is something that I try and tell aspiring painters as well. It's like, there's a lot of people out there who get very frustrated when they're painting because they're like, you know, they look at the model, there's a lot of details on it, and they're like, this is going to take forever. And I'm like, sometimes you just got to sit down and you're like, you know what? I'm just going to paint belts. And then as soon as you finish all the belts, you're like, I did it. I finished that part of the project. You get your little dopamine release, because if you look at each individual component of the model, each one is like its own separate project, and you get your own little like reward. You're like, yeah, I did it. I finished the thing or whatever. So I agree with you. I do think it's all about setting like smaller goals to like a bigger goal, where it's like, you know, do the side quests to finish the main quest kind of thing. It's interesting to see that that also applies to, I guess, any kind of art, really, right? Every song is made up of, you know, individual stanzas of music. I don't know if that's a...
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I do think that that is something that is important to learn. Even when you're, like, trying to play miniatures games, it's like, if you want to play a Firelock game, like Blood and Plunder, it's always best to be like, hey, learn the basics of the rules before you learn how to do all the fancy stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is what you do.
Yeah. You gotta pick something that you're not gonna drive yourself insane. Like, try, I don't know, learning how to make a cup. Right? Don't start jumping into making humans and stuff like that. Just set out tiny little tasks. And also, a big thing I learned in like art school and working in animation and stuff is learning when to say, okay, that's enough. Like, learning when to stop. Like, nothing's ever going to be perfect. Nothing is ever going to be perfect. You can always just get there. It's good enough. It's good enough, right? So it's good to put the pencil down.
So two things I can say to that is, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good enough. And something that Bob Ross always used to say was, don't fiddle it to death. When you're done, just walk away from it. Just be done. Also, I just realized, people listening, I think I was talking into the wrong microphone this entire time. So it's definitely going to sound a little weird. It might have just drastically improved. That's what happens when you got to switch between different recording things. Anyway, so at the end of the episode, now that I finally discovered that, isn't that wonderful? Emily, do you have any closing thoughts that you think people might find interesting?
Oh, man, I love hearing everybody's like thoughts and stuff about the minis. I'm so happy everybody's like happy with them. Like, they see all the little details. I'm like, oh, I didn't think anybody would like see that or care about it, but they do. And that makes me really happy. So
sometimes when I'm painting your guys' models, I have to go on a little scavenger hunt on every single individual model to find the butts of the pistols.
Yeah.
I'm just like, God darn it. I missed the stupid rifle butt in his... Then you paint it, it looks great. Yeah. But then it's like, you look at it like, what a weird looking thing. Oh, that's a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is. Oh, I see. Yes, but I agree. The little details, I think, are what people, especially the painters, just drive them crazy.
Yeah.
So keep doing it.
I'm really happy that everybody gets to see our stuff. I'm so proud of all the work that we've done. Like Daniel, you know, Mike, Lily, everybody. I'm so happy with all the work that we've done, and I'm so happy that everybody's like enjoying it, honestly. So, yeah.
I will say there's one issue. There's one issue with Firelock, and it's that not enough people walk up to Mike and crawl up next to him and whisper, "Let Emily make a megalodon."
There's not enough.
That's probably the
There's not correct. Enough
That's probably
people.
The biggest issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, closing thoughts. As I did very much with Dan, I really do appreciate what you guys do for the game. I to this day, anytime anybody asks about the models for this game, I always say there's the resin models and there's the plastic models. They both look good. The plastic models are not my favorite, but I understand why they exist because it's a great entry point into the game, but you definitely lose some of the like individuality that a lot of the resin sculpts do. And the resin sculpts are some of the best in historical gaming. End of sentence. They are fantastic. I am determined to paint all of them. I am told that there's like models that were in Kickstarters when the game first came out that I don't have a hold of yet. I'm going to paint them. They're going to be in the collection. I'm going to find them eventually. And by God, I will talk about these models forever. So for you, I assume you are in the Firelock Discord. Do you like it when people reach out to you and be like, hey, obviously constructive criticism. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. If they want to say if they're going to give constructive criticism. Yeah,
that's key here. Don't be a dick.
And they want to say hi. Sure. I'll be like, yeah, thank you for liking my models.
So that leads into the next thing. So guys, thank you very much for listening to this episode. Absolute privilege whenever I get to talk to anybody in the industry. Emily was an absolute gem. Dan, super stand-up guy. These two are probably some of my favorite episodes that I've done just because you get to like see behind the curtain, and it really opens our eyes to whenever we push our little ship across the table, we have to realize that there was a lot of steps that had to happen in order to get to that point. And each step is as important as the next. Without people like Emily and Dan, that can't happen. Right. So they're almost like at the very base level. It's like, listen, you got to have the thing designed before you can make it. And I do think that they don't get enough thanks in that. I think people tend to forget about that, where they're just like, hey, I bought this model for $35. I painted it and then it died in one shot in my game. I hate everything. But it's like, you got to realize there's a lot of work that went into that model. And it's people like Emily that do that. So I would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I'll thank Mike once he lets you make that Megalodon.
I will make sure I'll notify him that he will be ambushed. I'll allow him. I'll be like, prepare yourself.
There's going to be a lot of people that are going to walk up next to you and just stand. So, okay, quick aside, there was an episode a long time. This is a real quick, very much out of the way update. Back in the day, when we were doing a lot more Infinity content, there is somebody in the Infinity studio who is in charge of a lot of like the stuff or whatever. And so we were interviewing Hoopoo, who you'd love Hoopoo. It's absolute gem in the industry. She was doing the Warcrow stuff. And I asked her, have you ever gone up to this other person in the office and just asked to touch his face? And she's like, no, I never have. And so later I found out that she did do that. She did go into the office and walked up to him and be like, hey, is it okay if I just touch your face? And then they had like a little thing where she touched the face and they just had a little ball about it. So it's funny how these little stories happen. So if you do that, hopefully Mike knows what's happening instead of just being creeped out.
Okay, I will kindly notify him to brace himself.
There you go. And I'll tell all of his friends. So I'll make sure Rufus and all of his buddies are all like, they're aware.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Making stories, baby. But yeah, so guys, hear me out. We really appreciate 5-star reviews. It really does help the show get out there, and it inspires us to find new people to interview and all that. Funnily enough, the way I found Emily and Dan was I was doing my painting stream, and Dan just kind of came on, and he's like, oh, that's kind of a neat model you got there. And I was like, yeah, it's something from Firelock. It's for their new Kickstarter coming up and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, I designed it. And I was like, whoa, hold the phone. What are we doing here? Why are you here talking to me? I'm just a schlub, and you're the glorious man that made these beautiful models. Thank you very much for gracing us with your presence. But yeah, that kind of stuff happens because people hear about the show, and it's amazing the people I've been able to connect with sometimes when you just realize that this little, I'm just going to say, this little crappy show reaches people, and it makes people feel special. And that's my goal here, is I want everybody to feel like they have their moment in the spotlight. Because I don't think that there's a lot of parts of this hobby that people don't pay attention to. And that's my job, is to bring light to that kind of stuff. Because these things are made by people. And Emily's a people. Are you a people, Emily?
Yes. I would like to be a Kraken.
Be a Kraken! You got to work on Davy Jones' ship on the Flying Dutchman. The Kraken woman. But yes, thank you very much. If you can give us those, if you appreciate the show, give us that 5-star review. We really appreciate it. And I don't even say I hate to ask it, because when I do, people do it, and it's great. And then, of course, share it with everybody that you know, so that they can listen to it and enjoy the show as much as possible. So, hey, I'm Dr. D. You can find me on Discord at Dr. D, which is dr.d, or you can email me at furypainting@gmail.com. Emily, where can they find you if you want them to contact you?
If you want to say hi, you can message me on Discord. I'm in the Firelock Discord. I'm EC Palaces. And my Instagram is also EC Palaces. So if you want to say hi or look at my work, you can see it there.
I'm going to look it up right now. I will attempt to put that in the show notes. There it is. Emily. I like the Angel Seraphim thing. That looks good.
Yeah, those are those.
Doggo?
Yeah.
There's a dog.
Just my life and my art on there all over the place.
The inner machinations of my mind are an enigma. Yo, girl, same. Anyway, yeah, so reach out to her, and like I said, constructive. If I find out you guys are being mean.
No bullying, please.
Spider Dad, he's coming down on you. They're unacceptable. But yes, guys, thank you for listening, Buccaneers. Make sure you always follow the glint of gold and keep the wind at your backs, Yahar.
Oh, gather round, you sailors bold, and hear the tale we sing of Dr. D and Scarlet Widow, who are the stormy rings. With clever hands and daring dreams, inventor of soup, held anchor's grasp. In every port, the legend grew, the tales unsurpassed.